Welcome to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century on Blue Ridge Public Radio. I'm Dr. Marcia Mount Shoup.
And I'm Coach John Shoup.
John's coached at the highest levels of the game of football for 26 years.
And Marcia is an author, theologian, and minister.
And we're glad you've joined us to go deep into some of the most pressing issues of our time.
On Going Deep, we go beyond the sound bites and highlight reels.
Hello, I'm Matt Bush, the news director for Blue Ridge Public Radio. I also produce Going Deep with the Shoups, and in this episode, we continue our conversation from our prior show, how sports and religion parallel each other. Our hosts have lived in these worlds in their professional lives, and we've already found several ways that these two cornerstones of our society follow the same path. We start this episode by discussing outcomes in sports and religion, and how even those run along the same lines. Religion, heaven and hell. Sports, win and loss. What is looked down on? What's a tie? Kissing your sister. Do you want to be in limbo or purgatory?
Hell no.
Here's another way that just sort of goes into that. Almost all of the four major sports now, football can tie, but they continue to try to create rules that there is no tie. The other sports, you can't tie.
Mm-mm.
Football, baseball, hockey, and basketball, you can't tie. Again, it has to be black or white, win or loss, heaven or hell. There can't be in the middle. Can't be gray.
Right.
The tie is gray. Or
where it's interesting, in soccer worldwide, though, you could lose a game but still gain points if you have certain number of goals.
I will say, as becoming a soccer fan over the last 15, 20 years, the biggest thing to learn was about goal differential and wins, losses, and ties and draws. And sometimes you want to draw, and sometimes you have to score three goals on the road to
That's a really good point.
And it just that was to my friends and I, as we learned the game, that was completely foreign. We don't have that here. I mean, hockey, you have points that you get for wins and wins and overtime wins and all that, but it isn't like what it
but
is
you
in
had
soccer.
A win.
But you had
to win.
There's still a win. And again, hockey got rid of ties during regular season.
We're all about black and white.
Yeah.
You're right. We're all about.
It just struck me as you guys were talking. It was just, we jumped.
That's a good point.
You know,
And what it means to lose, you know, and what the impact of loss is, you know, in the church. Traditionally, it was excommunication or, you know, shaming or, you know, casting out, shunning. And in sports, it's very similar. You get cut from the team or you're not going to play anymore.
You're
on the bench. You're forgotten.
Yeah.
You become a bad word, a negative, a cuss word.
The thing I would say, though, are these feelings of masculinity, of toughness, are deep rooted. It's real. I mean, you and I both, Matt, grew up in Western Pennsylvania, and I grew up in the 70s and 80s in Western Pennsylvania, and I only had brothers, and it's in my bones, this identity. And really, the last couple years, this is something that, boy, I've really had, you know, some difficult times wrestling with it. I'm the only football coach, I'll bet, in the world who's married to a feminist theologian with a PhD in religious studies. But that, you know, that identity, that masculinity, that toughness, that isn't something that I just thought. That's something that I grew up with, that if you're from my hometown that was a steel mill town, that's in your bones. Mm-hmm. And really, to this day even, and Marshall say it, there's times where I really don't even like, sometimes I look at my behavior and I'm like, golly, I wish I wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
I wrestle with those issues. And so I just wanted to make that point that it's real. It's, you know, I don't think Jim Harbaugh is just blowing smoke. I think Jim Harbaugh has the game of football deep in his bones.
Mm-hmm.
And when he says those things, I not only know where he's coming from, there's a part of me that feels where he's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And my mind is saying one thing now, but my body, mm-hmm. my bones, and sometimes they're saying others, and it's hard. And it's been a hard journey.
And if football is this sort of definition of masculinity, and let's look at the places we're talking about. Jim Harbaugh coaches the University of Michigan. You and I grew up in Western Pennsylvania. This is all Rust Belt, mm-hmm. former manufacturing powerhouse of the United States that has completely fallen at all times in all those states, Western New right. York, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. really deciding a lot of politics still, and a lot of that still comes from that. There's another sort of connection there of yes. football being that is the sport in those areas. That's the Big Ten right. footprint, and the Big Ten is, of all the conferences, well, maybe not now, the SEC has certainly grown in prominence, but the Big Ten, that's the traditional football,
right.
Michigan, Ohio State, and all that. And it just struck me, too, of just how that also plays into it, too, of masculinity and growing up in manufacturing areas.
Right.
Yeah. You had to do that. It had to be tough. You had to be tough to go work in the steel mill. For right. 12 hours.
Right. You really job. Did. And I guess that's the thing. You know, we've come across people that just, you know, and I even roll my eyes, you know. But there's a part of me, too, that gets it. There's a part of me that feels it. I mean, I still have that conflict in me sometimes mm-hmm. of, oh, go hit them hard. Oh, my gosh, what about CTE? I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I guess you could say these demons I wrestle with daily, it seems.
Well, and I think there's more, again, since I'm a theologian in the room, I'll get mm-hmm. it back to that, that there's more that hooks us in than just the performance of gender or kind of understanding our place or what is virtuous, what is the best way to be or to act or to be accepted in your community or your culture. But I talk about this in Touchdowns for Jesus. Part of what sports gives us is a place to taste and feel what redemption is. And by redemption, I mean something is healed, something goes right, something finally works out the way it's supposed to. So part of why a sport like football is so compelling and for people is that it's a place where we get to hope again, like, okay, maybe our team's going to do it today. Mm-hmm. And gosh, it feels so good when we score a touchdown. And it feels so good when the play works the way it's supposed to. And again, if we think about the context in this country that helped to give birth to this violent sport, it's been a tough few centuries, you know, in this country. I mean, there's been a lot of pain, a lot of disappointment, a lot of conflict and confusion, and a lot of ways in which we have struggled to kind of maintain this aura of success and dominance and prominence. And so I think, and it's the same thing in religion. What keeps somebody coming back? What keeps somebody hanging on to some thread of belief is I really hope somehow, some way, there's some justice out there, or there's somehow, some way, everything's going to be okay and it's going to work out for me and my family and the people that I love and those people who are suffering. And I think we can't discount that either. Somehow that's underneath.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. In the kind of the kind of more primal thing that gives rise to these other things is at our core, we really just want things to be the way they're supposed to be, or to be able to understand what we do next if they don't go the way they're supposed to. And sports gives you a way to dust yourself off, pick yourself up, and try again.
To pivot this a bit to something else is looking at both as an event, sports and religion. Mm-hmm. You may not know, Marcia, how much you want to hear religion as an event, but
well, it is.
you have a weekly sermon that you do, Sunday service and all mm-hmm. that. You don't have skyboxes in the church, but
we have a balcony.
We have a balcony, so that's close.
Some churches do.
Well, I would say some churches do. Again, another connection between the two, the former home of the Houston Rockets, the Compaq Center, the former home of the Los Angeles Lakers, the Great Western Forum. Once those teams moved out of those facilities, they became mega churches. Joel Osteen's headquartered church is the former Compaq Center in Houston. So again, this comes down to that of how they are an event. It speaks to what you started off talking tonight about, connection. Mm-hmm. We feel connected when we're in the pews. Yeah. We feel connected when we're in the seats somewhere. Mm-hmm. Talk mm-hmm. about that.
Well, I talk about this in Touchdowns for Jesus as well, just the kind of electricity of this kind of pop-up community that happens in a stadium. And knowing whose side you're on, knowing where you belong, having a framework in which, you know, literally your body is fully engaged. And I think really sports has done a better job than religion in a lot of ways of engaging that visceral yearning that we have as human beings to feel it, to really be there, to get lost in a mm-hmm. moment. You know, America is where Pentecostalism was born, and that was part of the kind of foil to mainline Protestantism and this kind of really staid, stoic, intellectualized form of religion was feel it, get rested in the spirit, fall out, speak in tongues, you know, dance and sing and move around. And that's part of kind of what sports gives people is permission. It's an area where it's permissible in our society to jump up and down and yell at people and hug total strangers and, you know, sing songs and be joyful and be despairing and all of that kind of range of human emotion. And there's like there's a template for all of that right there. And it is no coincidence that kind of this kind of great awakening in American religion was about these huge crowds and these tent revivals and these places where.
Well, a little bit of research I had done about Billy right. Sunday said he had done his original. Oh, yeah. They were in tents. But it was one of his services, and the tent blew away. Mm-hmm. So he had started telling the towns, if you want me to come, build a tabernacle, mm-hmm. essentially.
Yeah.
Sports team, hey, we don't like the old stadium we have. Why don't you build us a new one or we'll go away? I didn't get just a connection to it. And back to we chatted earlier this year, Marcia, you came in and did something for us when Reverend Billy Graham passed away yeah. right outside of Asheville. And talking about that was another – he's another good example of this. He started doing tent revivals.
And then he filled stadiums.
Then he filled stadiums.
Like no one else could. And it was an experience. And it was mm-hmm. an experience where you were supposed to move. You were supposed to get up and change and make a decision and decide whose side are you on? Whose mm-hmm. team are you on? Are you on God's team, Jesus' team, or are you on the devil's team? And it was like this moment of truth. And, I mean, it is no coincidence that it's, you know, tens of thousands of people all being called to this, mm-hmm. you know, this moment.
In the mid-90s and up into 2000... Bill McCartney, mm-hmm. the head football coach at the University of Colorado, who won a national championship in 1991, organized a group of Christians called the Promise Keepers. And these Promise Keepers were only men. And boy, they'd fill up stadiums throughout the country as well. And so that just takes the Billy Graham, the football stadiums, and now pump some more muscularity into it with football and a football coach leading those stadium revivals.
And weren't the Promise Keeper gatherings, like, those were places where people were asked to pledge their, like, that they would be this kind of husband, they would be this kind of man.
Right.
They would, they would make promises. And they would learn how to be promise keepers.
Another thing is faith. We discussed this in an earlier episode, too, about fandom and faith. You stay with your team, and people who are the hardcore fans, the faithful, they really don't like the front runners that just show up when the team gets good. Mm-hmm. You could say the same about people who find Jesus or find God.
Yeah.
At certain points in their life, kind of out of nowhere. It's kind of like being a front-running sports fan, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. I think there are some really interesting parallels there that we don't talk a lot about. Like somebody who is a person of faith and they really, they have stood the test of time. You know, they see God as a presence in the good times and the bad times. And then there is this rhetoric around this, you know, this kind of paradigmatic struggle of faith that when something bad happens to you, that somehow your faith is rocked to the core, like there must not be a God because why would this be happening to me if there is a God? And I think it's an interesting it's an interesting parallel because in sports, it's, I don't really want to be associated with a loser, or gosh, it's really exciting to be associated with a winner. Maybe some of that's contagious, you know, mm-hmm. if I hop on the bandwagon, maybe I'm a winner too. So there's almost like this weird shadow side to both of these that there's this repulsion about losing that when you feel like a loser or you feel like your life's going downhill, that somehow you must be being cast out or you must be being separated from the ground of being or separated from what makes your life have meaning. And that in sports, when you lose, you also kind of are separated out or you lose your community. You lose... Well, it's an interesting thing.
Well, maybe there's... a comparison
yeah.
between team sports and the traditional church settings. You know, when we grew up, or I grew up in the 70s and 80s, in Pittsburgh, you were a Steelers fan. You were a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. You weren't allowed to root for Roger Staubach. You might get beat up in school if you rooted for Roger Staubach or Brian Sipe of the Cleveland Browns. But today, people don't root for teams as much as they root for individuals. Today, people pick and choose different things. A big part of this has to do with fantasy football. Mm-hmm. You could live in Charlotte and certainly root for Cam Newton if he's your starting quarterback on your fantasy football team that week. But you could also be rooting for Antonio Brown, who's a wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers, because you need him to score three mm-hmm. touchdowns, yeah. and a tight end from San Diego, and a running back from the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. I wonder, sometimes I think religion has become a little bit like that too. Hmm. I mean, coaches... and fans and players, they're independent contractors now. Right. They can find it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes in religion, I think to myself, I am Presbyterian. I'm PCUSA. My wife's a Presbyterian minister. But when I read something about Buddhism, I think, oh, I like that. I could take that, you know? or I read something about another faith tradition. I'm like, that resonates with me.
And I want to say something also to you, Marcia. When we were talking about after Billy Graham's passing, you said that his success was blurring all those lines.
That's what I was going to say as I'm listening.
But you said at the time, you're seeing a sort of a soft regression back into very defined lines, even within Protestantism of Methodists yeah. and Baptists and Presbyterians and Lutherans. You're seeing that
it's
come back.
A little bit of soft resurgence of that. But I'm listening to you and I do see a parallel in this kind of free agency mentality that you don't just automatically kind of go to the church that your parents raised you in.
Right. Or root for the team that your mm-hmm. father
right.
rooted for.
Right. Or even think of yourself in that way. Like, I mean, a lot of probably 80% of our new members at Grace Covenant were Baptist. And I think the soft resurgence that I mentioned in our conversation with about Billy Graham was not necessarily that, oh, I was raised Presbyterian, I'm going back to the Presbyterians. But it's more like, okay, I'm Presbyterian now. Somebody tell me what that means. Like, mm-hmm. I want that to mean something. And I wonder if the parallel in sports is how people have a real sense of identity to their fantasy football team or their group, or there's some other way that they kind of identify. It's not the same thing, but they still want to know what this means. They still want a narrative that kind of defines that. And I think the soft resurgence around denominational identity is more about, whoa, things have gotten really chaotic, like, and really quickly chaotic in our country. Where's my grounding for getting a little traction here? What do we believe about this? What are we going to do about it? And I'm wondering if there's a parallel somehow in the fantasy football thing of, I don't have my big T team, but I've got my little T team, and here are the steps I take to make it the best team and to make it a part of my identity. I don't know.
I think football, and with the fantasy football teams, are making things a bit more ambiguous in who you root for and what you pull for.
But you're pulling for your little T team.
You're pulling for your little T team, yes. And it may not be the same team that your father grew up pulling for. And so those allegiances, maybe that's the word, the allegiances are not the same that they once were, but maybe that hunger for being on a team still exists.
Right, and having that team,
I like that,
and mean something.
Yeah, I like that word. You know, the big T team would be the Steelers, who we grew up rooting for. The little T team would be the fact that I have Dak Prescott as my quarterback, and someone else is my running back.
Name their fantasy football teams? Like, is it like Jason's Jaguars or something like that?
I'm not in fantasy football. I do a fantasy baseball team, and yes,
does
I
it
do
have a name.
I do name.
Is
them.
It Matt's Matt?
It's not. Mine's more of a joke, but
you can't say it on air.
No, actually, I can. It's just going to be a really obscure one. Everyone goes like, "What are you talking about?" I guess it does have a religious name to it, but I'm
interested in that. So I know that you're a big Pittsburgh Pirates fan.
So I know where
you're
going. So
if you have a player,
say
you have a player who's on the Cardinals that you're rooting for.
All right, the Pirates are playing the Cubs this evening that we're recording this.
Okay.
If I would to have, now we are in also a league that's only National League, so we only draft National League players. Yes, there are times where, say, if I had the Cubs starting pitcher tonight and he's facing the Pirates, the starting pitcher is kind of like the wide receiver or running back in fantasy football. They're the ones that can get you the most points. So, yeah, you have that. Now, I'm divorced enough from it to think like I'm always going to root for the Pirates. I'll always, though, in that situation go, hey, how about a 1-0 game where a reliever for that team loses it? So
win-win.
I don't lose points because a loss loses points for you. So there is that a bit of just sort of like, I'm still rooting for the Pirates, obviously. Just, you know, 1-0 reliever blows the game late and doesn't cost the starter anything.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there are also
that's
times.
Interesting.
So, I mean, that's the rationale.
That's really
but
interesting
at
to
the
me.
Same time, our fantasy league, I mean, we pay for it, we get payouts and all that sort of stuff. But it's more just a bunch of friends who just got together in D.C. and
Frankly,
did a little drinking and thought it was a really fun idea to do. So for us, it's more of just, hey, let's.
It's community.
It's more community. It's more of us just joking about it. Now I live 7 hours away, but we have a Facebook message chain that we probably text every couple of hours about that sort of stuff, particularly during the season.
And
so again, it's about community.
And is that also more ways to kind of feel connected and enjoy
absolutely.
The game, whether you win or lose, there's some other ways to enjoy it.
Absolutely. But again, it is about community, and it is about that. And that's our community, I guess, of eight guys who, you know, just hung out at the same bar and really like baseball. And that's how we sort of just, you know, jazzed it up for ourselves. But, I mean, at the same time, we also were always there watching. They were all Nationals fans. You know, they went through the playoffs for all those years. That was a big thing to go up and watch the game and all that sort of thing. So there is that level of community to it, too.
But, right. And I think people are finding their way back to church right now because they have this kind of, you know, muscle memory or whatever of we went to church on Sundays, or we had a something bigger than ourselves to frame how we understand what's going on in the world. Like, the world's too hard right now. I need something to contextualize it. I need something to kind of hold it in some package that makes me not just feel really despair right now. Even if it doesn't look the same, I'm going to somehow get the same benefit. Like, I'm going to feel more connected to something bigger than myself. And it doesn't need to look like it did for my parents, but it needs to feel good, you know. And I think, you know, I hear that a lot from folks who find their way to Grace Covenant. Like, it just feels good to be here. Like, I feel accepted. I feel like there's a place for me. And I had this experience growing up, and it's different than that. But I get the same things that I really valued about that. It seems very, very profoundly parallel to the fantasy football thing.
So to wrap this up, and we've talked about this before, you've talked about it in your book, Marcia, if we pray for our team to win, and plenty of people do.
I have.
I have.
Which team?
I've the team that was paying the paycheck.
I've prayed for completions. I've prayed for yardage.
The team that was paying. What was that quote you said earlier?
I've called a play and said, "Dear God, help us. Can we just get this first down?"
Hail Mary. Did you pray on a Hail Mary? Because that's another tie of religion and sport, right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
People have prayed for their sports teams. Does God listen, whomever your God or deity may be?
So this is definitely a more complicated discussion than just a few minutes of chit-chat. But I feel like there have been these kind of camps about, you know, prayer and sports. On the one side, it's like, I'm going to thank Jesus for my touchdowns and the wins, and I'm going to, you know, use this platform to say it's all about God, all, you know,
so the
all
Tim the glory Tebow, to God. Kurt
yes,
Warner,
yeah.
Those
and players, then on yeah. the other side are the people that just scoff at that and think that's sacrilegious almost. That, like, why would God care about your touchdown? And I really feel like both are trivializing the God of the kind of Judeo-Christian tradition that is a deeply relational, suffering, compassionate, law-giving, kind of relationship-defining God. So God cares about every little thing. So, of course, God would care about football. I mean, in the Judeo-Christian tradition, we believe that God is an attentive, present God. So the people on the one side that scoff and say God doesn't care about football, that's a kind of distortion of the Christian tradition. And the people on the other side who kind of understand God as this puppeteer are also not paying very close attention to the Judeo-Christian witness, in which God is deeply engaged with humanity in such a way that sometimes God loses. Sometimes God changes God's mind. Sometimes God is even executed. I mean, in the Christian tradition, you know, God hangs on a cross and suffers the injustice of being a marginalized, rejected person in society because he spoke truth to power. So either side of that really isn't kind of giving the nuance that it's due to. What does it mean that I want to lift up a prayer in the middle of a football game? I mean, part of it means that I'm really hoping things go the way I want them to. But another part is that I really hope God is not too far away from this place, because I'm scared, I'm nervous, I'm excited, I'm really hope that I'm not alone right now. Like I said, this is a more complicated conversation, but for me, it's, I want to say, hold on a minute to both sides of that. And say, why don't you make room for God in that conversation? Because neither one kind of do. Let God be God. And that is a mysterious, merciful, suffering, long-suffering, loving presence that we, you know, we can't totally describe or understand. Don't get me preaching.
As I said, I prayed for third down conversions.
You've been listening to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century, from the studios of Blue Ridge Public Radio, NPR for Western North Carolina. Tell us what you think of the show by emailing us at goingdeep@bpr.org. Make sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter as well, @ShoopsGoingDeep.